ever put out a product, because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us, because what we say is in them is in them, because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, almost bottom of the hour, and we'll get visit in with Tony and then Sean Clancy as well. We, of course, one of the things we'll do with Sean, we'll check on the status of the tree. Everybody's worried about the tree. Tony Black, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I've been listening to you, and you're having some great handicapping sessions. And I know over the years you've become familiar enough with me to know never to ask me to do any handicapping to enlighten the listeners, because we'll lose a lot of listeners if they listen to my handicapping.
Well, the jocks are notoriously terrible, the handicappers. Tony, I'm going to talk to you about this story from California in a second, but before I do that.
Yeah, I know the story you're going to talk to me about, because I was going to talk to you about it.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. All right, because let's dive into that, because we are a tiny bit short on time today. So you saw the story about California
certifying the exercise, right?
Yeah. What are your thoughts on this? And talk about the community and the interplay and the relationship between the afternoon riders and exercise riders.
Well, you know, when you look at the exercise riders, their risk factor is the same as any jockey's risk factor, as far as I am concerned, because they're going out there on horses. Maybe they're not working many horses, but they're going out there where a jock might go out there 4, 5, 6 times a day. I know exercise riders that would gallop 8, 10, 12 horses a morning and go to a farm or go to another facility and gallop another 10 or 12. You could get on a ton of horses, a good exercise rider. And a lot of times the exercise rider that is the most experienced get some of the worst jobs out there. You know, they'll say, oh, you know, this horse is really a problem. We'll get so-and-so. He's good on a horse like this. And they're not always getting catered to. The exercise rider is being asked to perform his duties on sometimes horses that are really difficult. And he's out there in a lot of traffic all morning long, you know, and you have horses going both directions. You have at times loose horses, and he has to be qualified. He should be physically qualified to do the job. Now, when it comes to the absolute physical qualifications, I think they're going to have to maybe tweak the program as it goes along, because a lot of times experience has a way of being very effective in your job, and it's not always extreme physical fitness that makes you effective in your job as an exercise rider. Experience and fitness, you know, go hand in hand in many cases. I think the program is a good concept because tracks, of course, and you know, they have a different way of looking at exercise riders when it comes to freelance riders, when it comes to exercise riders that are under salary and covered by workman's comp in most states. Freelance riders, jockeys, aren't covered by workman's comp because they're not under salary to a trainer that's buying workman's comp. And also, when it comes to your racetracks, they try to keep the premium expense down because of injury and catastrophic injury and accidents out there. I think, you know, there's a way, this is a way of making the insurance that covers these riders, workman's comp and all the other ways that they have the insurance programs in place that covers these riders, and it will help control the premium, the cost of the expense of the insurance. Now, I'll tell you, in the old days, and I can relate to the old days, you know, you had outriders out there, and they were like the stewards of the morning. You know, your outrider was an experienced rider, exercise rider, jock, whatever, you know, but he was, had a tremendous amount of experience. And he would make sure that the riders that came out there were able to do the job. You know, and he would make sure that he observed every rider at some time during the week, the mornings that they were out there, to make sure that they were capable and they weren't causing any situation that would endanger themselves and the riders around them. But, of course, you know what? The whole racetrack, the way it operates, has totally changed. A lot of times because of all the problems when it comes to authority out there on the racetrack, and outriders don't want to get involved in that. You know, as soon as you bring somebody to the stewards, you're a bad guy. As soon as you tell somebody what to do, they don't have to listen to you. You know, it's a different mindset what goes on the racetrack than what went on the racetrack in the 60s and 70s and the 80s. You know, but I think the program's going to have a positive effect. But I think it's going to have to be tweaked along the way. You know, when you read the guidelines and, you know, the physical make, the physical fitness that's expected of these riders and how they're going to test them, and they have to meet and be qualified and pass these tests, I think the tests are going to have to be maybe tweaked a little bit. You know, it's a good first step, but I don't think it's the final step.
And this may be a jurisdiction by jurisdiction thing. I mean, obviously the trainers, there's the trainer licensing program. Does a trainer have to, that brings a exercise rider onto the track, do they have to vouch for them to get them, to help them get licensed?
Yeah, I think what it's going to do, it's going to affect the trainer's coverage. If he brings someone on the track that is not certified, I think that's the way. I read through the article real quick. It's a long article.
Now, Tony, aside from what they're going to do in California, let's say in Philly, a kid comes around and you know, how do they, you know, they got to get licensed. You can't come on the grounds, especially there. You better, you know, you might need a microchip to get through the gate. How does an exercise rider break in?
Usually it's someone that has been licensed at the track and worked in some capacity, you know, and he has either been brought in by a trainer and that trainer got him licensed. He's on that trainer's badge list. First off, you got to be on a trainer's badge list. Now, like even at Philly, they put a program in a place where it's affected two areas. When it comes to jockeys that aren't riding every day, they don't allow you to have a jock's license and covered by their insurance. You have to ride so many mounts month or a week or a month before you're allowed to have a and before they allow you to keep your jock's license. Like me, I have a stable employee's license. I don't have a jock's license. They said, if you want to get on horses, you also have to be on the trainer's badge list because they want the trainer's workman's comp or trainer's insurance to cover you, not theirs. So that's the way Philly does it, which I thought is kind of, it's typical of what Philly does at times. I mean, they don't do anything that adheres to what's done nationally or what's done at every other racetrack. No other racetrack would tell me you can't have a jock's license, you know. But that's all right. But, you know, they try to affect their insurance premiums and keep them under control by eliminating certain people. And I understand that. Insurance is high. You know, they tried to get rid of the catastrophic injury accident insurance that covers the jockeys in the afternoon, and we had a big battle about that. You know, we've been one of the only racetracks in the country that didn't want to cover jockeys during the running of the race or at any time. You know, and we really went to oppose that, and they do carry a catastrophic injury accident insurance, and we kept it in place. But they've tried on a couple occasions to eliminate that, their responsibility. And, you know, when it comes right down to it, I mean, we're putting on a show for them, and they're benefiting from the show that we're putting on, you know, jockeys and trainers, everybody that has horses. And they should be responsible for to some degree for the injuries that occur while performing the duties of a jockey morning or in the afternoon. So we did keep that in place. But I think this is a good first step, what California's doing. You know, when it comes to racetracks, you know, they want to make sure that the people that are taking care of or working with these horses, if training horses, jockeys, riding horses, are qualified to do so. I mean, when it comes right down to it, a trainer has to take a test to be certified as a trainer.
Right.
You know, he has to prove his qualifications. He has to have worked on the backside. It depends on which jurisdiction. He has to have worked around horses and whatever. A jockey has to take a test to prove his you know, he can be certified as a jockey. He has to do so much to perform in front of, let's say, the outrider, the steward, before he's given his jockey's license. An exercise rider could come in there. You could say he's an exercise rider. A trainer could throw him up on a horse, you know, and nobody checks his qualifications. Now what they're doing is they're going a little bit deeper and further into it, and they're checking that individual's qualifications. That's really it's really understandable that that's what a racetrack would want to do. I don't know about all the details in the process and the way they're doing it, if it's going to have to be tweaked, like I said. It might have to be. But riders that get on these horses' backs are not only taking a risk to themselves, you're risking the health and well-being of horses and other people that are on that track with you. I mean, I've been at tracks where there has been someone where you had to say, listen, outrider, he shouldn't be out here. He's always doing this, or he's always doing that, or he's galloping horses the wrong way in the middle of the racetrack. You know, he's an accident waiting to happen. And it'll be taken care of, you know. The outriders should be aware of who's getting on these horses and watching them and not just sitting there drinking coffee in the pony shed and hoping nobody gets loose. You know, I've been at tracks where every time there's a loose horse, the outrider, best thing he does is chases him off the racetrack, doesn't try to catch him. You know, because depends on the kind of stock that outrider is riding. In many days that I rode in past years, there was outriders like Joe Shelton, Red Hal, Phil. I don't know all their last names, but these guys were truly, truly great outriders that knew exactly what was going on out there. And if they chased the horse off the racetrack that they couldn't catch, they made sure they didn't run him into you. We've had accidents at parks where there's been, it's been at times, I believe, could have been avoided if we had different experienced riders on those horses or on the track, or different experienced riders trying to control those loose horses by catching them or running them off the racetrack. It's a really, it's a job that at times can really, really need to be done by a person with an extreme amount of skill, riding skills. And if we can elevate the licensing of people that are on these horses' back by making them meet certain qualifications, I think there's nothing wrong with that. It just possibly the program has to be in place, and we have to tweak it along the way to make sure it really works and it's doing what it's set out to do. Get qualified.
Well, it's a set of, you know, it's a set of you know, physical requirements. You know, it's not a written test. It's a physical series of physical tests that you know, essentially, you know, confirm fitness and the ability, I imagine, to, you know, to maintain control over a horse based on, you know, the seven exercises. They come, if you haven't seen the piece that Dan Ross wrote, and I'll put a link up to it, it comes from the British jockey school program for this, and it's kind of interesting. They've got a couple of pictures, these wobble cushions that are like little, you know, like little you know, kind of like little rockers that go under your feet, and you basically have to do squats and you know, there's several, you know, there's several stages, 60 seconds, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and 4 minutes are the process of maintaining, essentially maintaining your body presence, Tony, the core, and you know, it's strictly a physical test as opposed to, you know, the kinds of things they ask trainers, you know, the written test.
Right, and the physical test. You know, I was reading about that with the wobble board, whatever they call it, the wobble pads, and how it does, this thing mirrors the European or the English jockey test. I understand that is something that has been truly tried and tested with you know, in England. The whole thing about it is, let's not think that the mental aspect of getting on a horse has a large degree of importance when it comes to your qualifications. Now, that I don't know how you're going to test that with, because sometimes the only way you can test that is the same way they monitor jockeys and watch jockeys ride in the afternoon. And if you're out there making too many mistakes, they're pulling you up. You know, that's why you have suspensions. You know, you went left when you should have gone right. You get 5 days or 7 days. And that's the mental part of being a jockey. Where are you going? You know, you end up on the inside of the 3/8 pole and you got dropped. Well, that's when you almost got dropped. Well, you don't run up on the inside of a group of horses at the 3/8 pole when they're changing leads and dropping over, whatever. But this is where the outriders and the people monitoring the performance of the exercise riders is as important, is very important. You know, the physical aspect is very important. But the mental aspect is important also. It's how a person conducts themselves out on that racetrack, in traffic, or on a horse that's misbehaving. You know, that's the mental part of it. It's not all physical. There is a mental aspect that plays into being an exercise rider. And that's where I just hope the people monitoring these riders knows what they're looking at, whether it's the outriders or if it's someone, the clockers, patrol judges, or someone that comes out early in the morning could sit up in the steward stand and maybe witness what's going on out there and have some say in, man, we see this one kid come out here every day. He's doing this. He's never got the horse. He's going the wrong ways. Never on the outside fence. He's never just jogging. He's galloping. You know, if a horse doesn't want to jog the wrong way and always has to be galloping, I used to tell some of these kids, then you know what? turn them around and tell the man you better gallop him because he won't jog the wrong way. He's breaking out into a gallop, and, oh, I can't tell the man that. Well, if you can, and then anyway, when we take him the right way, we can't gallop him. He runs off. Well, then you shouldn't be on him. Get somebody that can gallop him. You know what I mean? I see horses now in this day and age. The only time we trained horses the wrong way would be if it was just one that we were trying to get around there, get some miles into him that really couldn't gallop. You put equipment on him, he couldn't gallop. Now horses on a daily basis train more the wrong way than they do the right way. And then they wonder why they get just as tough the wrong way as they do the right way. Because they get used to training. They're creatures of habit. If you do something time and time again with them, they're going to do it time and time again. And doing it the same way time and time again. They you train them the wrong way, they don't relate to it as the wrong way anymore. So that's why they gallop and they don't want to just go easy. Years ago, when you trained a horse the wrong way, it was because he only trained once in a while the wrong way. You never could get him around there right the right way or comfortably the right way. So you would turn him around once in a while and take him the wrong way just to get an easy gallop or easy jog into him. But now they hit the racetrack, you go in, you go the wrong way, go once or twice the wrong way, and you bring him home. Well, it's the same as training the right way anymore. If you can't gallop him the right way, you eventually you won't be able to gallop him the wrong way because he thinks the wrong way is the right way. You know, but you know, some horses will jog because they're more push button and they understand exactly what you want. You know, and you jog one and it makes him. Sometimes it's good for their hind end. You know, I'm not trying to play trainer now, but jogging is good for a horse. Sometimes it muscles them up and behind. It utilizes their hind end real well. If they're the kind of horse that is going to let you perform on him in this way. But I see kids out there, and they're supposed to be jogging the wrong way. They're doing a wide-open gallop, and I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, you're an accident waiting to happen. And it shouldn't be that way.
Well, Tony, I saved this for you. I knew it would be in your wheelhouse. Another follow up to it before we go. What's the respect and you know, appreciation level and interchange between the community of exercise riders and the jocks, for jocks that, you know, come out in the morning and get on horses? What's the relationship like generally?
Well, I would hope that these jocks, and I always tell these kids, you know, if you have some questions about a horse, sometimes the best person to ask is the guy that's getting on the horse. I always maintained a close relationship with certain exercise riders that I had a tremendous amount of respect for, where I could go up and say, hey, Jimmy, Jimmy Hicks, or John Conza, what did this horse do this morning? Did you let him gallop along, and does he get out? I always wanted to maintain a real close relationship with people that got on these horses, because you know what, Steve? They get on them more than you do, than me, you know? They're on them every day. I'm only on them once in a while. So if they could give me some heads up, it was beneficial. I can remember one experience, and I'm not going to name names or anything. I had an exercise rider that I was close to, John Conza, and he said, hey, Tone, you see this horse you're getting on? He says, the other morning, I walked into the barn, and he's laying on his side and seizing. He's having a seizure. I said, what? He says, and that ain't the first time it happened. I said, you got to be kidding me. He says, yeah. He says, the vet came over and said he's having seizures. I said, well, how would you like to be on this son of a gun wide open gallop or breezing? And I says, the trainer never said nothing about that. Oh, he ain't gonna tell you that. And this was a horse that had some good race records, you know, had some stakes places and was a nice horse. But, you know, it's like a person that has seizures. You have seizures. You know, you're not going to keep galloping along. If a seizure hits you in the middle of a gallop, you're going to nosedive into the ground. So I eventually got my work the way of getting off of that horse. And one day I watched him work. I happened not to go watch him work. I was just happened to be on the racetrack when he was working. And he took a nosedive with the kid. And it wasn't because he took a bad step. It's because and I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, it could have been me, but I had a close relationship and maintained a close relationship with people that knew what they were doing. And, it's always good to be involved with people, whether it's grooms or exercise riders. You know, respect them. If they're the people that you know are qualified to do their job, you're better. I don't care if you're a jockey. You're just a jockey. You're no different than them. You better respect the people that work with these horses, because a lot of times they know more about them than you do.
That's a little unsettling story.
I don't want to mention names because it would be totally inappropriate of me to throw these people under the bus. But, you know, that's the kind of things that go on at times. You know, this was years ago. I'm not saying recently. Maybe recent doesn't happen. But this was years ago it happened.
Well, Tony, I appreciate it. And as always, you know, we go into an area that is not all that well known. I mean, it's not something we talk about all that much. I mean, it could even probably expand the discussion more at another time about, thinking about guys in New York in particular, Raul Rojas and Rudy Rodriguez may be the most interesting crossover, exercise rider and afternoon rider, part-time. Raul, too, those are guys that, won some, won races in the afternoon, but, whether it was weight or height and so forth, eventually... there's a bunch like that, actually. There's probably others, if I took a minute and thought about that, would get calls in the afternoon or try to, but we're always fighting weight. It's an interesting sidebar. One other thing I should slip in here, too, as we wrap up, Barry Pearl and the Jockeys in Jeans with the PDJF, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund, they've got their Stallion season auction starting tomorrow. The preview is up at starequine.com. I just retweeted it, and it opens up the bidding. Actually, it looks like the bidding is open because I see some of the seasons are already been bid on. But starts at 9 o'clock officially tomorrow and closes 5 p.m. on Monday. Here's another great painless way to contribute to Jockeys in Jeans and the PDJF.
Yeah, and just real quick, PDJF, great organization, Jockeys in Jeans. Every dollar that they raise goes 100% to PDJF. And my hat's off to Arnold Erlescu, Barry Pearl, and the guys that came up with the idea of forming this organization. They do a great job, and the money is totally 100% forwarded to PDJF. It's a great organization. It really is. Well, Jockeys in Jeans.
Well, Barry did that. Barry built that from the ground up, from nothing.
Yep. Yeah. Give him a lot of credit. Good guy.
And we'll remind people again tomorrow, and actually we can even remind people Monday, because it does pass through to Monday, the 24th, 5 o'clock. And Star Quine. com. STARQUINE.
Right. And, just to give you a little idea of Barry's experience, when I had the bug, he was an old rider at Liberty Bell. He was an older rider at Liberty Bell. He was a journeyman when I was a bug boy. So you can figure out the age difference.
You're unbelievable. I love it. Tony, I appreciate it. Great chat. And we'll talk next week. I'll be in Vegas, but we'll touch base.
Hey, take care, Steve. Keep up the good work. Always a pleasure, and thank you for all you do. Brother, love you.
Not at all. Tony Black, love you, buddy. Tony Black, everyone, and some exercise rider conversation, and I'll send out the link to that story if you didn't see it at TDN. It's pretty cool, and the exercise PDF that shows a couple of pictures, including one of the exercises is I can ask Clancy about this, too. For the lower body, exercise ball, leg repetitions, and holds, you basically are in a sitting position leaning against an exercise ball pinned against the wall. You can try this at home. Then there's these wobble cushion squats, the testing hamstrings. The upper body, press-up position and hold, elastic band push to metronome, core strength, planking. Interesting. And then there's a cardiovascular test as well for these riders. This seems a little maybe demanding. And if Sean Clancy joins us, Sean, could you pass one of these rider certification programs?
I'm listening and I'm thinking, where did I just tune into Steve Bick or back to ESPN? After Sports Center back in the first couple of years it started and the exercise shows. I'm like, what am I listening to? How did I walk into this?
Well, on the other line, we have Jack LaLanne on the other line, actually.
Perfect. I definitely could not pass any of those tests today. Not sure I could have passed the test when I was riding, but certainly not now. I can tell you that much.
It sounds like, I don't know if you saw the piece by Dan Ross, but it one thing that's interesting. Exercise riders, this is the California insurance program. Exercise riders are 40% of the claims, but 70% of the costs.
Wow.
So basically, trying to make sure that everybody's in good enough shape to, I assume, to hold horses. I mean, right? What else can you prove? I mean, you can't really test them mentally, I don't see a way how,
Yeah, it's an interesting concept. I mean, certainly it's a good approach to at least look at and see what kind of, if there needs to be a test and try to keep these guys, at the highest standard. Sadly, there's just, it's a supply and demand thing. I just think there's fewer riders out there and fewer, back in the day, there were a bunch of kids that grew up with horses and wanted to gallop horses at the track, and it's very different than it is today. That's your biggest issue, but I've been on the soapbox forever. I still think they need to concentrate on training facilities and trying to improve the training facilities where you can get these horses in different environments. When you go out and watch, you stand at Saratoga every day and horses are jogging the wrong way at Oklahoma while horses are breezing, while horses are galloping. There's no country in the world that has that much action, that many horses, in one place. I shouldn't say any country in the world. I'm sure it's crowded other places. But if you could concentrate and invest in your training facilities, you get the joggers, you get the horses trying to have an easy day, you get them away from the chaos and the high tempo action of the training track or the main track where horses are breezing and galloping, where those horses just galloped. If you get those horses away from there and get them in different environments, I think all that would go a long way. Like Old Horse Haven racetrack, the track at Saratoga, you could open that up. You could create some jogging trails, different places. I think that's so important, and I think that would eliminate a lot. Not eliminate. It would certainly lessen the injuries to exercise riders, certainly lessen the stress of our horses. Give them some quiet days, give them places where they can relax and maybe not be so high strung. Might help with bleeding, might help with everything. That's
interesting.
So crucial. We focus so little on our training facilities and offering up these horses different options to have easy days. It'd be interesting to know what are the injury rates at Fairhill Training Center or a place like that for exercise riders. It'd be an interesting study to see if a place like that, are there fewer morning accidents at a place like Fairhill or other training centers that have better facilities? It'd be an interesting concept.
Well, and one of the things that everybody talks about when they come up here is going across the street and going down to the lowlands and going out that trail and letting horses, jog around a little bit and get a little bit of a, being a horse feel.
Yeah, exactly. It's so, I just think it's so lost to that. And, you know, obviously some of the places you don't have the room, you don't have the space. If you look at the backside of Churchill Downs or Fairgrounds, and they're very tight and small places, but places like Saratoga, I think Belmont Park, places like that, you could try to make some, you know, just improve the facilities where you could get these horses off the main spot where they're going every day. We literally take a horse, we breeze them on Saturday, they walk on Sunday, and they go out for their easy day on Monday and try to jog two turns the wrong way of a racetrack where they just breezed on Saturday. It just doesn't make any sense. If you took a couple hundred horses off of there every day and were able to jog them around Horse Haven or down around some jogging trails down there in the lowlands, like you talked about, over there by the annex. I don't know, just different places. I think that would make a big difference. You think of Clare Court, you know, that Clare Court takes a lot of pressure, or takes some pressure off the training facilities. If you had little places like that where, you know, more places like that where you could just get the horses and the exercise riders a little bit of a relief from the pressure of the main drags of Oklahoma or the main track. Obviously, I'm talking about Saratoga. I think other racetracks are, some of them could, I think they could look at it, think about it.
Well, the other, I would think the other issue that, and you can probably speak to this, I brought it up with Tony for obvious reasons, but you can address it too. How many Gory Smiths are there out there, you know, training riders? Where is the current, generation of exercise rider coming from?
Yeah, it's just been lost, and, you know, it's basically a way of life, the whole agricultural, the whole farm, you know, system of people growing up and being around horses and riding horses at a young age and then wanting to get a job at the track. It's just, if you look at the, you know, the exercise riders of 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago, very different, you know, just the education that they had and the, you know, they, and that, you know, you just, it's changed so much. So now it's a much shorter term. People are coming in and it's nobody's, I'm not sure it's anybody's fault. I mean, the trainers are doing the best they can. But that whole way of life is just, it's just been minimized so much. You know, you think about young kids growing up, they're just not riding horses like they used to. And they're certainly not becoming exercise riders like they used to.
Well, the interesting part of this is just the whole, you know, the fact that it's one of these areas of the racetrack life and the process that you just don't even, you know, who even really thinks? I mean, I can't recall too often. You know, any coverage of the exercise riders. I mean, it's a rarity that individual riders get even cited as part of the process. I mean, there's some that we get to know, I think, during Breeders' Cup lead up and Triple Crown season, and particularly, you know, Derby lead up, because of the intense coverage, Sean. But it's an area that, as Tony said, I mean, it's incredibly important, and it's really, to some degree, a bit of an afterthought.
Yeah, for sure. I think the standard was so high for so long that you kind of just took it for granted. Now if you look at it, I think the quality certainly has gone down. And it's, you know, something that probably needs to be addressed. But I don't know what the right. Again, you're not changing. You're not going to just wave a magic wand and get a bunch of educated kids. You mean, the Europeans are still doing it. They're learning from a young age, galloping horses, and they have a great pony racing circuit and fox hunting and things like that. And I think you do have a quality of rider, but they're under pressure too over there. I mean, they've got a real help crisis, and we certainly have one here. And you know, it's, again, I think if, you know, I do think if you concentrate on training facilities and offering up different options, I think that's one approach that you can certainly improve. But yeah, good exercise riders are a game changer. And if you look back at horses that, you know, horses that made it and horses that didn't make it, a lot of times it hinges on who was galloping them and you know, who wasn't galloping them? It's so crucial. You can see that. I mean, you go to a big barn and they got, you know, this one exercise rider's getting on the best six horses, and it's not by accident. It's because they're the right. best exercise rider there. I mean, if I go to, I could think any of us, you could watch a day's training from a trainer without knowing any of the horses' names, and watching the exercise riders, you could probably rank the horses pretty quickly on which ones are the good ones and which ones aren't. Or if, well, I should say which ones are the fast ones and which ones are the slow ones. Now, certainly there's some horses that are difficult. Some of these guys, they end up, some of the really good exercise riders, they end up on the toughest horses all the time, which, you know, sometimes you get too good at the job and you never, you know, you're basically handed all the projects. That's not easy either.
Who's a exercise rider? If I say to you, who's the best that you've ever observed over the years that hasn't gotten the attention they deserve?
Oh God! In history, I mean, you look back at guys, you know, going way back to a guy like Bob Witham, who, you know, galloped Forgo, and you look back at Leo O'Brien back in the day, was getting on some really tough horses for Sidney Waters. Bernie Dalton's unbelievable rider. Kieran McLaughlin says he's the best there's ever been. He's probably right. Still, you know, rides races now, but was an exercise rider for years. Rob Massey, watching him ride, but he's just a beautiful rider. He's down here in Virginia now, but he worked for Kieran, worked for Todd Pletcher. You know, there's just any number of guys. So he used to be the jump jockeys. I mean, you know, you go to Saratoga, and you know, they always, all the old timers, they always wanted a good jump rider. I mean, that was, you know, they were always looking for that kind of guy, whether that was Dougie Small or Tom Skiffington or, you know, whomever. It was always looking for a good jump jockey. They weren't necessarily looking for me, but I tried to fill that role.
I think there's a piece here. There's a thisishorseracing.com piece in the wings.
Of course. I mean, going back to Fair Hill, when I was growing up there, this guy Greg Morris, who's now a steward at the NSA meets, he was as good as I've ever seen ride. Just could ride anything. Get him to settle, switch off. Beautiful rider. Guys like that. But yeah, I mean, makes a big difference for sure. You talk to guys like Rusty Arnold. I mean, I see him up there at Saratoga. I remember one summer a couple years ago, he said, "Oh, what I'd do for a good jump rider right now." Made me laugh.
Well, interesting topic that just, you know, one of those kinds of subjects that, you know, I enjoy these conversations because we learn things from, you know, people like you and Tony that, yeah, we otherwise just don't, you know, you just don't hear this conversation too often. The exercise rider that always comes to mind is Dana Barnes.
Yeah, of course. Yep.
Dana was the first time I can recall, in regards to point given, that, you know, being aware, you know, of a specific exercise rider on a prominent horse.
Right, sure.
That was one.
Yeah. How about Andy Dernan on Fusaichi Pegasus? Remember that?
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
Anybody else could have got him around there. He's just unbelievable.
That's a good one.
What he did on that horse.
You know what? We're gonna add this to one of the things when we talk to trainers. I'm gonna. You know, there's been a big movement to have you know, the grooms acknowledged on broadcasts and you know, after wins, and we're gonna get the exercise rider folded into some of that stuff. All right, good. I just wrote it down. This is
I'll give you the best Bob Witham story. Anybody out there remembers Bob Witham? He was a lovely guy, English guy who died several years ago now. He ended up in Camden working for Shadwell, broke all those babies. But back in the day, he was galloping Forgo, and he told me a story. He started off the gallop at a routine gallop around Belmont Park on Forgo, and his rein broke, and he's galloping along, and he said, you know, he just foregoes, obviously big, strong, pulling, you know, it's just a machine, right? And Bob said, man, he just knew, don't, you know, the worst thing he could do was panic, right? So he's just sitting there on him and trying to get him around there, and he said he galloped around one big circuit of Belmont Park, and came to the spot where he always pulled up, and he just said, whoa, big horse, whoa, and just talked to him, and old Forgo just galloped and, you know, kind of just drifted out the outside rail, stopped, turned in, and basically hooked up with the pony and walked home. And I said, Bob, what were you thinking when your rein broke? I mean, what were you thinking? And I can't say that what he said on the radio, I guess, but he said, he had this funny kind of British accent. He said, F me, my rein's broken, I'm on Forgo. Now that's a good exercise rider, right? Just to not panic, not do anything, just sit there, just get them around there. I just love that story.
That's a good one. That's perfect. Perfect. Well, let's shift gears and get a couple of the topics in today. And morning has flown by. And geez. There was a note from Steeplechase. I see that we now have Todd Marks writing copy as well as taking photographs. The point-to-point race that is going to be offered at Ocala at the new horse park, at the expanded horse park, the Florida Steeplechase. And it looks like this might grow into a full-fledged, you know, NSA event.
Yeah, I hope so. I think it has the potential of becoming a vibrant place for the sport. Obviously, probably the beginning of the year or the end of the year would be logical spots. I know Archie McCauley's Irish fellow that has ridden some races, and he's kind of getting it off the ground with a big team down there. And it sounded like they were trying to make an NSA sanction meet this spring, but you know, it was a little bit of a rush, so I think they decided to just kind of do a soft, soft start, do a point-to-point, which has worked really well in the past. And a little Everglades did that down in Florida. A few other race meets have kind of done it that way. And I'm glad the NSA, they've gotten behind it, which is really important. I think the leadership of the NSA has improved in that respect, where they, you know, they look at a point-to-points and try to cultivate some, you know, national steeplechase options, and trying to lend support to different meets. Different people are trying to make a difference, trying to make something happen. So I think it's great. Hopefully it'll go off. You know, it's a little tricky early on, early March. I'm not sure how many horses will be ready to, you know, ship to Florida to run. But, I think they'll get some horses down there. Hopefully they'll get some, it's basically just, you know, it's kind of game, it's game practice, really. You just try to get out there, and hopefully the fans come out, watch it, like it, enjoy it, and they can raise some money and become a big part of our sport. Be great. We need new circuits, we need new venues, we need new options, new opportunities. So I hope it works, and I expect it to work. I would think it would be a great spot for the sport to grow, and kind of, you know, good place to start the year, or again end the year.
Sean, explain what point to point is, and how it's different from, you know, the chase and hurdle events that, you know, that we're more familiar with.
Yeah, it's really just a name. The point to point is an old historical name, but really it originally they'd race from point to point. So you'd race from here to that point over there, you know, seven hills away, and that's how it originated, was why they call it a point to point. But basically a point to point is a non-sanctioned event. So it's not recognized by the National Steeplechase Association. It doesn't count on a horse's record. They're usually a very minimal purse. And it's more like spring training, or, you know, kind of a rookie league, or, you know, it's a place for young riders, for older riders, for amateurs. Certainly professionals compete there. I mean, you get horses will prep at the point to points before they go on to the National Steeplechase events. But it's really just it's the same thing. I mean, if you went there, you wouldn't necessarily be standing there saying, what is this? It would look, it's the same exact type of race. I mean, it's racing, hurdles, flat racing, timber racing, you know, a lot of the same jockeys, a lot of the same horses. So it won't look any real, really any different. It, you know, quality might be a little less as far, you know, they're not going for a lot of money, so the pace might be a little slower. But it's really just steeplechasing as you know it, but not recognized by the NSA. And again, slightly lower key, so maybe a little, you know, horse races might be going a little slower, maybe not as full fields, but ultimately the same sport.
Very cool. All right. We'll certainly get the team on as well and for more information, both at nationalsteeplechase.com and thefloridasteeplechase.com. And boy, I keep bringing up, I'll be in OBS for the March sale, but I want to get over to this horse park that apparently, you know, just keeps growing. I mean, it's like
promises. You haven't been to Iroquois yet. You're going to go to Ocala. I appreciate the effort, and I hope you go. But you know, we've heard.
I go to Ocala. I broadcast the show from OBS. Wow.
Come on, man.
Well, this is easy.
Reach out. It's
practical.
Do a show from there. It'd be great.
Maybe, but actually, you know what? It is in March, right? But hold on, maybe does this overlap? What is the date?
It's early March. March fifth. There you go.
March 5th. No, because I'm not the the sale, because we got Tampa, and. You know, it's. Let me see here. OBS is, yeah. Tampa Bay Derby is the 12th. That's Fountain of Youth Day.
Get a jump start. Come on.
It's gonna be tough because I'll be at Oaklawn until the 4th because of the HBPA convention. But then we head to Tampa and we'll be at OBS the 14th, 15th, 16th. Of March. We'll try again next year. Exactly. The Florida Steeplechase.
How's Nashville looking? You got that on the schedule?
We're trying. I'm trying. It's just, you know me. It's got to be practical.
The practical nature of you. I just didn't even realize there was such a practical side of you. You're in horse racing and you're talking about being practical.
That's a fair point.
Like that damn Christmas tree. I mean, I guess that's why you got the silver Christmas tree that you put in the attic. That's practical, right?
Tina just took it down the other day. She did. Monday.
I think you just put a curtain around it or something, no? You mean you take the decorations off?
She did. They went back into the closet and talk to Trombetta because Marie, she won't take it down apparently. Ask Trombetta. I'm telling you, go over to Trombetta next time you drive by Trombetta's. Go the Christmas, take a look in the great room. I think the tree is still up.
I love it.
Speaking of which, everybody wants an update. How's the tree?
I hate to say it, it's pretty shaky. I'm not sure it's going to make it. Not sure it's going to make it, sadly. I did everything that, you know, I got a lot of texts. I got a lot of instructions from listeners, and I tried to follow all those. I haven't given up, but it's not looking good.
Well, should we call in an arborist, maybe? Do we need a...
I need an arborist, exactly. I think I'm already 300 down on the tree, so I'm not sure, you know, when do you call old friends and, you know, pension the horse? I mean, that's the question. When do you say, I gotta cut my losses here?
We may have to name a horse. That's a good name for a horse, the arborist. Right? That's like a 19th century horse. Boy, the arborist, sire
of
Leamington.
Yeah, sounds like a big chaser, right? Sounds like a 4 mile chaser, deep ground. And the arborist towards the 12th in the Somerset National. Yeah.
Speaking of great champions, tell us about your Eclipse ballot and your impressions of the finalists.
I don't know. I mean, I thought it was pretty, I didn't really find it. I found it pretty clear. I mean, I thought it was pretty clear as far as voting. I mean, I didn't really struggle. There's a few that were tricky, but I thought for the most part, it was pretty, pretty, you know, clear cut. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but, yeah, I didn't think it was too difficult. I mean, I made Nick, obviously Nick Scow Horse of the Year. That was easy. 3-year-old, I guess. I mean, is that the biggest one under question? I mean, I don't know. Would that be the one that people are?
There's the one this week that is, and Jay Pridman will have the final word tomorrow. But the 3-year-old male certainly seems like essential quality that the scales tipped. Who were your three though? Out of curiosity,
3-year-old colt was essential quality, Medina Spirit, and Mandaloon. In that
Mandaloon,
order.
Mandaloon,
yeah,
Mandaloon. Wow.
Yeah.
All right. I don't know if Mandaloon's in my top five.
Yeah, that's who I went with.
Interesting. All right. I did Essential, Life is Good, Hot Rod Charlie.
Yeah, I could see that.
What did you do in the sprint category, which feels like it ended up being, kind of blowing the turn?
Yeah, I went Aloha West, Dr. Shivel, and Jackie's Warrior.
Dr. Shivel gets a nod. Were you surprised that Flightline shouldered his way into the finals?
Yeah, I was a little surprised by that.
Yeah,
I can see it. I mean, I can see what I can see their train of thought. But
How about on the turf side? Because the turf feels like this. To me, it was just that complete eye crosser.
Yeah, that was tricky. I went Yabir, Domestic Spending, and I went Smooth Like Straight in third, which I know you're going to go Smooth Like Straight and just
nope.
do that.
No, I was third. I got him third. I got him third.
Unbelievable year if you look what he did. It's incredible.
Well, I completely agree, and I also picked Jabir first. I put Space Blues. If I had it to do over again, I probably would have gone Domestic. I just wish Domestic, and I wish he had been healthier and had a more complete season. And I don't not to discount the, I don't mind I don't mind a dead heat, but I don't know because Gaffaud didn't do anything for me, really. How'd you handle the fillies and mares on the grass?
I went Warlike Goddess, Althika, Santa Barbara. I thought that was tricky. I mean, I thought Warlike Goddess was, I was fine there after that.
She's going to win.
I was confused after that. Not confused. I could have gone either way after that, I guess.
It would have been easier if we could have put all of Chad's fillies and mares together into one filly and mare. I got Shantasara third, but I also love Regal Glory. I like, and, I mean, there were, Chad had literally, five in there, six were worthy of a vote. I threw Love's Only You in and gave her a wink because she was so special, across the globe.
That.
Yeah, but Warlike Goddess to me. I got a big response from your brother when I mentioned that, obviously after the Mean Queen and Snap Decision, I put Down Royal third, Sean.
Wow. I'd say that was a stretch.
Okay. All right. I just thought...
She beat. That division was so weak that I just... I'd have trouble with that one.
Well, three wins, though. How many horses on the circuit won three races last year?
No, I mean, I give you that. They just were... It was just a subpar division.
I hear you. Any owner or
cool breeder? Horse. I mean, I love her. Awesome.
Yeah,
horse.
I mean, I just, you know, that I always remind everybody, Sean, in these discussions that the first place vote's the only vote that matters. It's the only one that counts.
No, of course, I do that. I mean, I give a shout. It's almost like you give a shout out to a horse that you thought was kind of cool or deserved a mention. I mean, I do that. It's like, I find that easy. Put a horse that just deserves that second or third. It's hard to put them on top. You know, you get like Smooth Like Straight. He'd been hard to vote. It'd been hard to make him number one, but I just liked the horse. I thought he had a great year, very consistent. Just missed being, you know, could have had an unbelievable year, right? So.
And how did you handle Godolphin on the owner breeder front?
No, I gave both owner breeder. Their numbers and their, I mean, what they accomplished, just extraordinary.
Yeah, I didn't think there was.
It's
much
boring.
To,
I mean, I you know, yeah, it was a little dull, but I felt like it was felt like they deserved it.
And
I guess the only comment on the breeder. I mean, I've seen that. You know, you see all this stuff on Twitter and place about Fred Hertrick's stable.
Yep, Watercress.
Watercress, and I still think the stats and the information you get I think a lot of us just miss that because they were in partnership and, they get a little lost. I mean, if you stop and look again, I could see what people are saying, but just when you're given the information at hand, we should probably, I mean, look, you could spend a lot of time researching it, but I'm not sure that's, I'd rather somebody else, it'd be better if they gave you, somebody else provided the research, I guess, than trying to independently do the research. But that was an interesting concept after you looked at it. Yeah.
Well, I've had Hertrick and Fielding together as a, particularly that year that when you had the nice horse of Edwards, of E5, but they had half a dozen stake horses. This year was a little weirder on the Hertrick front because there were Hertrick Fielding horses. Then there were some that Hertrick had his name alone on the breeder line. So it was not, you know, this goes back to that period where you had the, Seth Klarman was sort of, Bill Lawrence, they were starting to diverge the holdings, and so there was, I think, one season or two where Klarovich and there was Klarovich and Lawrence. It does add a wrinkle. No, there's no doubt. But it's hard when there's the various agglomerations. I mean, you're going to get this coming year may end up being very tricky when you've got ownership things like Windstar and Sienna Farm.
Sure.
They've got right. They got three horses on the Derby future today. What does that portend down the road when there's going to be other Windstar horses? And there's also that, what's the Windstar, the Kasner, the Maverick Racing.
Maverick,
I mean, how do you parse this all together and out and so forth?
Yeah, I think it's tricky. I mean, the partnerships have always made it tricky. It's like if you look at a guy like Gary Barber, who is in partnerships with a lot of different people, they don't go down, it doesn't go down as one entity.
I've tried that,
too. Do you factor that in? Is that a bonus? Or do you look at it and say, partnership, being a partner with a horse isn't as big an accomplishment as being a single owner of a horse? I mean, you could look at it that way, or you could look at it as, that's a bonus, I guess. If it was a jump ball between two owners independently, and then one of the owners had other horses in partnership and did well and had success with it, does that push it that direction? I don't know. I mean, I find that that part's tricky. I never quite know how to handle that. But look, I mean, Eclipse Awards, it's based on an opinion. I mean, the one thing, there's no, I mean, the definition of voting for an Eclipse Award is your opinion. So it's hard to, I don't get real vitriolic about somebody's opinion. I mean, it's just that's the definition of how it's designed. I mean, if you want a different system, that's one thing. But if you just spend your time arguing somebody's opinion. That I'm not sure that really works, you know.
Absolutely. Well, Jockey.
Rosario.
Yeah,
that was pretty,
it's his year finally.
Pretty easy.
Finally.
Yeah, I mean, deserves a great year. Class act all the way. Rode hard, rode well. I thought that was easy.
What'd you do on The Apprentice?
I went Jessica Pfeiffer.
No, it's going to be very close.
Circuit.
Yeah,
I
that's fair.
I just, the circuit pushed it that direction for me. I just,
good point. Good point.
Yeah. I put a lot of weight on circuit. If an apprentice can hold their own on a better circuit, then I usually that'll definitely shift it that way for me.
I absolutely agree. I like it. And finally, what'd you do with trainer?
I went Brad Cox first, Asmussen second, Chad Brown third.
I have Brad Cox, Steve Asmussen, and speaking again of the using the third place finish as a third place ballot. As
Gary Siaka?
Almost. He was fourth on Lobster and on the strength of Lobster and Chowda. Michael W. McCarthy.
Yeah, good year. I can see that.
Right?
Yep, I can see that.
You know, in addition to you got smooth like straight, I assume you voted for CC, and he had Ron Bauer.
Yeah, no, I agree. Had a great year.
So, and he, you know, doesn't have the numbers to compete with the giant, you know, with the big box stores, but, you know, awfully good. Awfully good. Well,
yep.
Sean, this was absolutely fabulous. A great follow-up to your season opening visit.
No, I'm glad to be here. Thanks. Thanks again for having us on, and let's have a good year. Let's look forward and have a big year.
Absolutely. The team from ThisIsHorseRacing.com, the Saratoga Special, and they've been, I tell you, they've been churning out the work. And how did Joe and Tom do in the fun run?
They rounded out the superfecta. There were four, you know, we had a four-horse entry. Nolan Clancy, Joe's youngest son, he finished second overall. Ryan, Joe's oldest son, he was third overall, which older brother took a little, you know, one on the chin from the little brother there. And then Joe, we call him Pre for Prefontaine, he was a solid third, just, you know, that. You can just key him in third. He just runs his race every time, never overdoes it. Just steady as a rock, you know. Just gets there. And Tom was a strong, you know, strong fourth, and you know, rounding out the superfecta. So, if you're betting, you would put you could swap Nolan Clancy and Ryan Clancy in the two spots, key Joe Clancy in third, and Tom Wall in fourth. And if you're looking for, just wondering where I finished. I was a solid non-runner on the day. But, you know, as I said, I made a lot of declarations last year of all these things I was going to accomplish and accomplished none of them. So I'm under-promising and trying to over-deliver in 2022, which is not my normal or natural style, as anybody would know. But that's my strategy this year. We'll see how it works.
I love it. I'm glad I thought to ask. Tom regaled us last week with his snowshoeing, and he's out there. He's out there with the chains on his snow, you know, on the snow tires, and he really had me laughing. He's ready for, you know, he's ready for anything. He's got these what do you say, the rubber, the pull-on rubbers that go over the sneakers and over the running shoes.
Ask him one time how many pairs of shoes he owns. Just
shoes,
ask him that question.
Or running shoes. Like running shoes or
just total. No, just shoes. Running, all his shoes combined. Just ask him how many pairs he has.
What's the is there an over-under in this that I
Yeah, if you said, I think 70, I'd say 75 is a good number, and I'd take the over.
All right, now, I thank you for this because it gives me something to.
You need some fodder, right?
Well, my favorite shoe story revolving around guests is Scott Hazleton, who we were waiting for the bus out of Churchill to get to the media lot. And I happened to look down, and he's got on these Italian loafers that had to be like $1,200 shoes. I mean, just looking at them. So I took a picture of him, and from that point, I started calling him Scott Hazeltoni.
That's when I realized I was in trouble, what I was doing for a living in American Pharoah's Preakness, when I wore I probably had a $500 pair of loafers and ruined them at the American Pharoah Preakness. And I thought, man, I got paid. I think I got paid $500 for doing the radio show, and it cost me $750. I think they were expensive shoes. They were totally ruined. I thought, this is the worst deal I've ever made. Paul Stewart, they're beautiful. Paul Stewart loafers, and just totally ruined at the Preakness.
Do you remember the party in the parking lot next to the Steaks Barn?
That's the best party of the year.
I'm going to forget Joe's last name. Joe's party.
Yeah, it's a great spot.
Do you remember the year that literally 5 inches of rain fell at the same time? It was as if there was literally a layer of water that fell in at the after the races Friday before Travers. I had very similar. I had a pair of Bucks. I had a gorgeous pair of Bucks that were brand new. In fact, I think one might have got sucked into the mud, and it may have disappeared. Period.
And you left it there.
Yes, it's still in that lot.
You know, it's a good party when you leave your shoes.
People were standing on tables. What year was that? I mean, a storm came through, a Saratoga storm came through that was just incredible. Somebody
That's a good
will remember.
Party, you leave your shoes.
Exactly. Sean Clancy, everybody.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show. Happy
Tremendous.
New Year,
thank you. Bye, Sean Clancy, on your Twitter. And that was fun. We'll stay here. We got about 20-plus minutes. And as promised, Jared Bernine joining us from Hill and Dale. Jared, good morning. Uh-oh. I heard a case. Did we lose Jared? I think maybe we did. Yeah, I think maybe we did. All right. He was... No, he should be there. All right. JB. All right, pick him up. He was tied up earlier. We fell behind today, and I texted him, but he. I guess they had some more weather to deal with in Kentucky. So we'll find out anyway. I want Jared to give us a little primer on. Bring in your mayor to Kentucky, and the team at Hill and Dale certainly can help. And we'll also see what his thoughts are on the roster this year. I haven't had a chance to talk to John Sakura, and we usually get a spring visit in. With him. All right. Waiting for Casey to give me the thumbs up. Okay. All right. He's going to call him back instead. All right. So, for those that don't know, Jared, the Stallion manager at Hill and Dale. And has not been mostly... Mostly we have these conversations very often with John. I can't remember the last time we talked to Jared. There he is. Jared, good morning.
Hey,
hi.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. What happened? You guys got more weather in Kentucky?
Yeah, like a lot of ice and more snow last night. It's like every couple of days we get hit hard, then it rains, melts, thaws off, and then we start over again.
Honestly, you guys have had more than we've had in upstate New York. Truthfully, we have nothing.
And it's kind of localized here to, you know, our Paris area and Lexington, like Louisville, and also like Northern Kentucky, Cincinnati area. It usually gets a little bit more than we do, but it's kind of hitting right on us a little bit. So.
Well,
but we're good. We're getting everything thawed out and get everything cleared off. And guys on the farm take care of things. So,
well, exactly. We got to get some nicer weather in, because we've got to let those babies out there, and as they drop, we got to, you know, let them stretch their legs.
For sure. It gives the guys a little warm-up and primer for breeding season here, too, making sure everything's clear before so everybody can get to the shed. And the breeding shed doesn't take any snow days. So.
No. No. In fact, what are we looking at? We got basically 3 weeks, right?
Yeah, right about there. Here in a couple of weeks, people will start calling, trying to squeeze mares in, and kind of officially opens the second week of February.
One of the reasons that we wanted to get you on, in addition to just, you know, catching up on the roster for this year at Hill and Dale, the whole concept, Jared, this came up from the conversation with Sid last week, and. Give everybody just an easy guide to how they bring their mare essentially to Kentucky to get covered. Because I think some people, especially if they're completely fledgling at this, and maybe they've got a mare that they just don't want to part with, and they want to try to. Try to breed them, but they're a little intimidated by the process. Walk them through it.
Well, there's a whole host of farms in Central Kentucky that they take seasonal boarders. We don't do it so much just because of the room as much, but we have farms that we work with, and there's lots of good horsemen here in Central Kentucky that will take them and. After they fold, or prior to them falling, I know a lot of regional places they'll fold in their area and then ship down to Kentucky to the farm. And once the mare starts cycling and coming heat, then they make their way to the various breeding sheds, hopefully ours. And then after 14 days or so, we'll know if they're in foal or not. And then you keep following them along. Once the mare's in foal, 42 days or so, it's kind of safe to ship them back, or even 60 days would be the end-all be-all kind of interregium cups close up, and you really can't bring them back if they're not in foal at that point. But 42 days is a good day to good time frame there too.
If you were going to do this, how far in advance would you suggest people, start calling and making arrangements, and because you bring up the cycling, that's a great point. And of course, part of this is going to be affected by your existing, if you've got one that's already, in foal and is going to drop, then you've got to potentially ship her and the baby, obviously, to Kentucky. I mean, there's different degrees of how this unfolds.
Yeah, and mares are different there too. They'll start cycling, and some people I know have waited, and they keep them there, and then they follow along with their vet. And if they're getting, they think they're getting close to ovulation, they'll go ahead and send them. But sometimes it doesn't work out, and the stress of the shipping, they ovulate on the van on the way to Kentucky, or it's kind of best to kind of get it here and let the vets here follow the mare along in her process. There's a lot of factors that go into it, weather, different phases for each mare. They're all individuals as well, too. So it's best to just kind of get them here as soon as you can and start the process and get them following along here in Kentucky. Doesn't have to be real early, but, 30 days or so.
if someone doesn't have a bloodstock advisor, and you know, we certainly invited them to reach out to Sid, but if they didn't have a bloodstock advisor, can they call the farm? Can they call you? I mean, you're general manager at Alapa at Hillendale, but how do people pick up the phone and
Give us a shout. We always here, myself, Rita Rosselli, John himself. Takes a few calls here and there, but me or Rita can take care of you. 859-255-8290. Would love to talk about any of our stallions or mating plans for any of your mares. Let you know what works best for us from our stallion roster, and shoot, even if you get something on that, something that's not on our roster, we can give you ideas or suggestions.
And whatever farm anybody reaches out to, they'll make the kinds of arrangements, and they'll introduce you to the boarding farms, and give you somebody to call. And I mentioned Oak Lodge. I've had a mare at Oak Lodge before, and I'm gonna draw a blank on another one. But there's smaller farms with really terrific horsemen. A lot of times it's families, husbands and wives, that are the care is terrific. And this is what they do. They bring in mares, and they've got on-call vet support.
Absolutely. Some of the best horsemen are here in Central Kentucky, and it's a labor of love for most farms, and just like it is for us. Peter Conway's our farm manager, and Miranda Gottsecker's our assistant brew manager, and Jeff Owenby and Larry Walton, our stallion manager. They all live here on the farm, and it's all a labor of love. And even from the stars that we have here, Gamin, Midnight Basu, Midnight Lucky, all those types, on down to the mare of lesser value, but they're all the same. Get treated the same. They're all horses that try to give them the same level of care.
Well, the important part of this is that there's people ready to help any prospective breeder. And they'll not only will Jared and John and Rita advise you and look at the pedigree and try to help you for your budget and matching up, but it can also give you an honest appraisal of Jared what the mare is appropriate for. I keep stressing in these conversations with Sid that understanding what you're dealing with and how commercial of a foal you could potentially get, and then deciding from there whether you're breeding to sell or you're breeding to race.
Exactly. Appraising the mare and knowing what directions and having the expertise, the options that are out there is the key, having the knowledge to have that. We can share our opinions on it. Everybody has their own opinion, but we can share ours. We got something for everyone on the roster, from Curlin at $175,000 all the way to Lost Treasure, who stands for five.
Well, yeah, I brought up Lost Treasure the other day. Yeah, look, because Lost Treasure is actually very interesting, and he's one of those types that John, pretty famous for giving a horse like that a chance as a stallion.
Yeah, he's got a little bit of that formula on the lower end of a Army Mule, a McLean's Music thing, Candy Ride, that type. He's got a little bit of that formula there with these. He's a group performing son of Warfront out of the legendary family of Urban Sea and Major Sires Galileo and See the Stars, are in that female family. He's just a length away from being a Grade One winner himself, and the French 2-year-old Grade One race, he finished fourth, but just beating just a length. And it was kind of a blanket finish there. That he was ultra fast. The Sons of War front, you know, they're very useful sires, like the Factor and Declaration of War. They all get runners. You know, I don't think they're going to set the world on fire with commercial appeal sometimes, but they're always up there in the getting winners left and right.
Well, and that, you know, that is the portion here when you say to yourself, I would like, it'd be nice to have something that's going to sell for six figures or more, but if that's not happening, then I want to get a runner. And you know, on that front, Jared, I don't know if you saw yesterday when I put out the show listing, but you know, Wednesday's Hill and Dale got the title of the day's sponsorship of the show, and I saw that piece, that ad about Mucho Macho Man, and it makes me want to bring him up, and it, additionally, a reminder about the relationship, the Adina Stallions at Hill and Dale with Go Sapper and Kitten Joy and Mucho Macho Man.
Yeah, Mucho Macho Man, he's a real racehorse sire. Sometimes when you get a Grade One winner, you get one good horse. It can be kind of fluky, but he's gotten multiple. Mucho Gusto's Grade One winner, Mucho Unusual's Grade One winner, and a host of others. And like you said, that ad we ran with the average earning index, he's right up there with, you know, the elite sires all stand for 80 above, and he stands for 7,500. And with his, you know, limited numbers out there, and he's taking advantage with his opportunity, and he gets you a racehorse.
It's astounding. And for those of you that didn't see the picture, the ad that is attached to the Wednesday show listing, the average earnings index, Curlin Tappet, Into Mischief, Warfront, Constitution, Ghost Sapper, Spitestown, Candy Ride, then Mucho Macho Man, the only stallion under anything, under 50,000 that's on that list.
Yep. He gets your racehorse now.
You know what else?
He's a winner. He's a winner at 2, 4, 5, and 6. Breeders' Cup Classic winner. We're happy that Tronic entrusted us with his other counterpart there, Ghost Sapper, when he moved over at the
Sure.
He's truly a living legend. It's one of my favorite racehorses of all time, and just to have him, see him every day. He's going to be a preeminent Broomer sire, Justify, Triple Crown winner already. Last year was number two on the general sires list.
Right.
He's picking up kind of where he left off there, too. It looks like he's going to have a good year as well. Fearless is already won graded stakes at the Gulfstream. And again, he produces himself over and again with Guano, Shaman Ghost, a whole host of other Grade One winners as well.
You mentioned
last year's Dubai World Cup winner.
Two things, and in fact, on that, on both of these, Mucho Macho Man also, size wise, I happen to have a Macho Uno mare. It fits virtually any size, right? It's not overly big. He matches up physically with almost any kind of mare.
Yeah, well, pedigree-wise, he matches up with everything. He's an outcross for almost anything. He can bring almost anything to him. Mucho Macho Man, he's got a lot of leg. Him or Midnight Looter is probably the tallest stallions in the barn. But just like Midnight Loot, they're very, very well balanced. So it doesn't look like they're like long, gangly things. So I think he adds a leg to mares, but you can breed kind of like to like as well. Tall mare, he's so balanced.
On the stallion front too, are they all still open, or is anybody booked out?
Charlatan has been overrun, and it's a testament to all his qualities. Son of Spicetown, and of a Quiet American mare. you know, lovely physical and the price point there. And everybody's getting tight. McLean Music, he's pretty much sold out. Violence, he's kind of picked up and setting the world on fire here again, too. So he's getting tight, but there's opportunities for a good mare on most everything on our starting roster.
In terms of commercial appeal, should touch on good Magic, right? They sold fabulously.
I'm super excited for the two horses that have 2-year-olds for the first year. Army Mule and Good Magic, they have first 2-year-olds of this year. I don't think I've been this excited about one horse, a pair of them that we've had in the 18, 19 years I've worked here at Hill and Dale. These two, I can't wait to see these horses run. Good Magic, they all seem to be intelligent and good movers, is the reports that I'm hearing. And they're all athletes here. Himself, he's a refined version of Curlin himself. Like, he's just a sleeker, more racier version of Curlin. And he's reproduced that. You know, I think he had 100 yearling sell, 50 of them brought six figures or more. So over half of the yearlings that he sold brought figures or more. 24 of them brought 200 plus, and I think 12 brought 300 plus, and they sold all the way up to 750,000. So lots of good things coming from the Good Magics, and all the right horsemen have some in their hands. And Army Mule, I know Rita in our office cringes when we use the tagline in our ads, the Mule Fever, but I have it. they're all racehorses. Like, we keep talking about runners or racehorses, but every one of his horses looks like they're going to win at some level. So it's not always the case with some. They all look like athletes. So, and that's kind of a testament to the commercial appeal of them as well. I think he had 78 sell, and 20 of them brought six figures plus, and it's a horse that stands for 7,500 now. It was 10 the first year.
Unbelievable.
So that's quite a return. I think 9 of them are 200 plus and sold not one but two at 400. And John and Vinny Viola have a huge belief in the horse, and you can just look through the sales results, but from the buyers and who bred all the yearlings that brought the money, and it's the horse really read a book befitting a horse of,
well,
it's three times as much as what he stands for. So.
Well, 7,500 for Army Mule, 50 for Charlatan, Curlin, of course, 175,000. How about Ghost Sapper, 75? Good Magic, 30,000. Cantheros just keeps getting runners, 20,000. Kitten's Joy, 50. Lost Treasure, we talked about, 5,000. Mucho Macho Man, a ridiculous bargain, 7,500. McLean's Music keeps working his way up, unbelievable, 50,000. Midnight Loot, who for 15,000, you want to talk about a value, and you want a runner, Midnight Loot, and we'll always reiterate that people mistakenly assume that I want to breed for a two-turn horse. Midnight Loot would have been a two-turn horse. Don't think he doesn't get two-turn horses. Violence, 25,000, and World of Trouble, 7,500, who John completely believes in and knows is going to prove out on the racetrack as well. Jared, I really appreciate this, because I want people, if they're curious and if they don't know what to do, pick up the phone.
Yep, give us a shout. Even a snow day, we're here in the office. If you want to talk about any of the stallions, anything else, give us a call.
859-255-8290. And when the weather gets nice, you can visit the palatial new home, Hill and Dale at Alapa. Jared Burdine, look forward to getting to Kentucky in April, and I hope we see you along the way before that.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Steve.
Not at all. Jared Burdine, everybody, and Hill and Dale, that will lead you by the hand and help you breed your mare or your filly, if you happen to unfortunately had a filly who you've got to retire. So hillanddalefarms.com as well for everything. But every farm will help you if you're if you're looking and you don't know what to do. And if you want to get a hold of Sid or I, we'll help you too and introduce you to anybody you have an interest in. Send you out into the race day. I'm going to get the Sam Houston action up as soon as I can. Gus has got Gulfstream action. And tomorrow, a lot of fairgrounds from start to finish. Thanks to Sean and to Jared, Tony as well, of course, earlier, and Chad Schexnader. Fairgrounds Racing Podcast. Good luck today, everybody. Weekend preview at the races tomorrow.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.